This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of September 17th, 2018. I'm Mason King. Honest-to-goodness wineries started cropping up in Indiana in the early 1990s, accompanied by the expected jokes about Dixie cups and fruit punch. But today, there are nearly 120 wineries and tasting rooms in Indiana that produce 2.4 million gallons of wine per year. They sell nearly $100 million in product and employ nearly 4,000 people. So, what the heck happened? Well, much of the credit for the rise in Indiana's wine industry goes to a small but authoritative team of experts at Purdue University. Since 1991, they've been providing their expertise in winemaking, from analyzing the soil to marketing the product. Nearly every winery in the state has leaned on the team's expertise. So we at the IBJ Podcast thought, who would be better to ask about a growing aspect of our agricultural economy that still doesn't get much attention? In some ways, the deck is stacked against Hoosier winemakers. Good luck finding an Indiana-grown varietal on the wine list of your favorite restaurant. In fact, you might ask the proprietor to look into procuring a fruity and fragrant Traminette or a dry but complex Vignole made within our borders. If you're more into reds, ask for a Chamberson, Marquette, or Frontenac. We talked viticulture with two members of Purdue's wine grape team, Bruce Bartolon and Jill Bloom. If Indiana had a state wine, and correct me, maybe they do, or state grape, what would it be? What is the most prominent kind of variety of wine or variety of grape that could best represent what we have in Indiana?
It's kind of a difficult question because we do have a state grape, a state wine that we named a few years ago. The variety is Traminette, and it's a variety that New York developed. But the cross was actually made in Illinois, just across the border here in Champaign, in 1965. And the seeds were sent to New York for testing. And long story short, we tested it for a number of years when we first started the program, and everybody really liked it. It's adapted across the state from south to north. And so I believe in 2009, we had a conversation about sort of a signature wine and variety that we could name, and that's what we decided to do, is Traminette.
And what would that taste like?
It's a aromatic white, can be made dry, but most of them are kind of a semi-dry to lightly sweet, and some people make a sweeter version of it. Jill can probably pitch in there.
I was going to say, I think one of the interesting points about Traminette is the parents.
Oh, sure.
Gewürztraminer
is one of the parents.
Oh,
so
I know Gewürztraminer.
Spicy
notes,
that floral, rose petal kind of aromas. That comes from the Traminette, from the Gewürztraminer parent, and yet it's a lot more cold hardy than Gewürztraminer, and pretty tough skin. Pretty a grape that can handle our climate here. Rainfall during harvest, those sort of things are really difficult on thin skinned varieties like Gewürz, and so it would never make it here. Besides just getting it through the winter, it just would rot and be terrible. But Traminette holds up pretty well.
And what would I drink that with? Because I think of Gewürztraminer as almost like a dessert wine.
It can be, but this is not usually that sweet. Generally, not made that sweet, and so it goes fine with fish or Asian dishes. I think that spicy and aromatic character goes great with Asian food.
Even around the holidays, I know it's always paired with turkey or cranberry dressings too. So, it's made in many different styles. You can go anywhere, as Bruce said, from a dry wine. We've had sparkling Traminettes here in Indiana, Traminettes in a can. And the other beauty of Traminette is that it's easy to pronounce and it's easy to remember. So that's always a good point when you're talking about new grape varieties.
But it has only been planted. I mean, it only was born, as it were, in the 50s.
Well, actually, it was released in 1996.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so over 30 years between when the cross was actually made and seedlings were developed.
I mean, grape growing in Indiana, is something that's still fairly new.
Historically, we were a big producer way back in the 1890s, and I think we were the 10th largest you know, grape producing state in the country at that time. But with prohibition and just the shift in agriculture in general, the shipment of a rail shipment of fruit from California sort of changed the need to grow it here locally, and the advent of row crop agriculture, growth regulator herbicides especially, mm-hmm. kind of wiped out the grape growing in the Midwest.
Yeah, my impression was that until like the 1990s that right. there really wasn't a wine industry.
Well, it started in 1972 with the passage of the Farm Winery or Small Winery Act, and that allowed people to make wine and sell it directly to the public. And that was that. We weren't alone in that. Almost every state in the eastern U.S. developed a very similar program, all in that early 70s time frame. Mm-hmm. And those were sort of a, you know, kind of entrepreneurial, rural development sort of an opportunity for people to do something different. And there was a lot of grapes planted in the early 70s, kind of a big rush to get things going. At the time, we didn't have those newer varieties from New York. It had been kind of a lull in planting. And so a lot of the grapes that were planted then were some of the original French hybrids, things like Vignoles, Vidal, Chamberson, those are all.
And they adapt to our weather conditions, right, and that's why we grow them
one,
here.
One of the parents came from this region.
It sounds like in the maybe 1991 there were 10 wineries in Indiana, and now there are more than 120.
Right.
So what happened? So you say there was a big influx of planting in the 90s?
Well, actually, I think there was sort of a long lull that 70s, you know, went along up until the 90s, about 20 years or 15 or so years, where quite a number of wineries got started. There wasn't any support from Purdue or any other university, and so they really didn't know what to plant, and they really didn't know that much about making wine. So when we came in, several of those wineries were not up to what we would consider, you know, par, or they weren't making very good wines, and it was pretty much a bad reputation on everybody. So it was a few key individuals who were really, who wanted to see it grow in the right way, mm-hmm. as a positive, as a professional industry, that moved to the legislature and said, let's get some funding to put a program at the university so we can, you know, we can get the help we need to grow good grapes and make good wine. And that happened in 1989. They got legislation mm-hmm. passed. That sort of kick-started things. And now all of a sudden you've got this Purdue Wine Grape Program, and we're ready to help you, you know, show you how to do it. So mm-hmm. that reignited the excitement about wineries in the state.
Okay, so I'm a farmer.
Yeah.
I have 10 acres, and I want to plant grapes. And I come to you guys and I say, hey, can you help me? I want to make wine. So what are you guys going to do for me? How can you help me become a vintner? Is that a correct term, vintner?
Yes, okay. Or a winemaker, grape grower. Yeah, sure. Growing. I guess the first thing I would ask is, do you drink wine? You know,
sure.
we do ask people that, and we get all different kinds of answers too. But I think we're here to help you find the resources you need, the right resources. So whether it's soil sampling, where to send your soil samples, you know, what to do with drainage, how to put up trellises. We're not going to do it for you, but we'll give you the right information. And you know, it's always important, the education that goes with all this. It's never ending. And, you know, we tell folks if you're into traveling, probably, continue traveling, because growing grapes, making wine, is a 12-month-a-year project. Mm. It's not a glamorous life per se, but it is a lot of work and a lot of physical labor. So,
you know, a lot of times what we do is invite those folks to come meet us right here in this room, all of us as a group. So we talk about their marketing plan, what their winemaking style is going to be, you know, what equipment do they have, what experience do they have, are they going to grow grapes, what part of the state are they
kinda
located
ask them
in,
about
what
their
your
story.
Site looks like,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
and what's it all going to be. So we can kind of give them that whole picture of, okay, great, here's, you know, here's what maybe the limitations of your sites are and what varieties you probably should think about growing, and then what wine styles you want to make mm-hmm. from those, and where you could source other fruit to round out your portfolio, sure. and then what's your marketing plan? I mean, what's the mm-hmm. are you just a winery with a small tasting room, or do you plan to have festivals or other events on weekends, live music every Friday and Saturday night? You know, what's it all going to
so
be?
So this is a business plan.
It is a business
yeah.
plan.
Yeah, and
it's,
I think what
exactly
we'd like
that.
To and tell people too is just to be patient along yeah. the process. Don't try to rush it. Try to get as much you know, background knowledge as you can. Ask the local winemakers and grape growers what they're doing, because we don't want to recreate things that have already been done wrong.
So of the current winemakers in the state, how many of them do you think that you've supplied some sort of research or advisory help to?
I was going to say
much all
probably 95%. Yeah. We've met most of them, been to their sites.
Yeah. Or they've come to our workshops without maybe coming and visiting with us personally. Many of them have done it that way, started basically on a one-on-one basis with us and then continued that over the years as they've grown.
So I'm a wine lover and I've got some money and I've got some land and I really am interested in making some wine. What would you tell me is like maybe the minimum buy-in?
Depends on the size you want to be. I mean, it costs lots of money, millions of dollars if you were to do it right. You know, I mean, see what some people have invested, it's easily millions.
It's not like $10,000.
But there's some people who do it for $10,000, and that's more of a small scale winemaking. They might be doing it in glass carboys or it's a little bit simpler system. And it works for
models.
Some people.
Yeah.
But I think in the long run, you want to get as much, you know, as invest in stainless steel tanks and the best equipment you can for the long run.
So I could get in 10,000, but I could easily get into $1 million.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about like 10 acres of grapes.
Well, you're talking about $10,000 to bring an acre into production. It takes about 3 years to come into production. So by the time you buy vines and post and wire and the labor that's involved, that getting all of that established and managing those vineyards to get them up, you've invested at least $10,000. That doesn't
per acre,
and that doesn't
over
3 years. Right?
Okay. Before there's a continuing investment.
Well, before you've done anything, that's
grapes.
Bringing in some harvest, and your annual management costs are more in the $2,000 or $3,000 per acre range, and you've got to balance that out. But because you've invested $10,000 or so up front, unless your yields are real consistent and you've got high quality, you know, grapes that can command a pretty high price, it takes 10 years to recover that cost of establishment.
That probably also means no long vacations between about February till November.
You like to play golf or, you know, you like to, you know, anything like
that.
It's very
labor-intensive.
You can give up that, you know, sell your golf clubs because you're going to be spending every weekend in your vineyard.
Your children and your grandchildren.
I just don't plant them and let them grow like my tomatoes.
No.
You
can't. And we do hear that, and we try to be very honest with in these meetings and when people we talk to. You just can't people come in with the plan, I'm going to retire in about 5 years, so I'm going to plant the grapes now, and that way when they're ready to start producing in 5 years, I'll have time to take care of them. That's completely wrong. All of the taking care of them is the first 3 years. All of the work is up front to train them, you know, get them established on the wire, get the whole training program, you know, trunks and cordons, all that has to be done year one, year two, year three. Then you're through. Then the hard work's over.
What are some of the other common varieties or the ones that are really right now in the most production, would you say?
I would say another popular variety in Indiana, and it's been here for a while, is Chamberson.
Yeah,
and it makes a red and rosé wine.
Yeah. It's probably our top red. It's not very cold hardy, and it's a very late ripening grapes, so it's not that well suited to the northern part of the state. Mm-hmm. So the guys in the northeast grow some other reds, mostly Marquette has been a popular one. That's one of the Minnesota varieties, and it's gaining in favor. There's also some interest in Petite Pearl and Crimson Pearl, some new ones.
Frontenac
out of the Elmerson Swenson program. So there's a handful of varieties that they can grow much better in the northeast than we can in the south. In fact, those earlier ripening varieties aren't well suited to the southern location. So
you're talking about in Indiana or
in Indiana,
States?
Right? Oh. Yeah. So things like Chamberson are really good grapes for areas south of I-70 or something along that line. You know what I mean? The southern half of the state.
And that was my question. I mean, do we have like a Napa Valley? Do we have like a one great place for growing grapes, or can you just grow them all over anywhere in the state?
Anywhere, but it's a little different, I think, from north to south.
There are certainly different climate regions in the state. We also have two American viticulture areas, just like Napa Valley is an ABA. We have The Indiana Uplands AVA that runs from about Bloomington down to the Ohio River on that upper, it's kind of an old geological feature in the center part of the state. Right. And then we also have the Ohio River Valley AVA, which goes all the way from Ohio and Kentucky all the way to the Indiana-Illinois border. So there's been some talk about establishing an AVA for the northeast part of the state, that kind of Natural Lakes region, and so those guys might get together and do that. You think of north central, northeastern Indiana's a pretty good area to grow grapes. It's not quite as row crop friendly, I guess. There's a lot more rolling topography, a lot of the Natural Lakes region. As you get to the northwest part of the state, unless you're on the Valpo Moraine, then you're really in some fairly low-lying, that's the Kankakee River Valley, and that's really not very good fruit-growing country. It's too low, it's too prone to frost and very cold weather in the wintertime, and just isn't, you know, it's better suited for mint and row crops that are grown up there now.
Are there some kinds of grapes that we in Indiana are especially good?
I was going to say, going on with grape varieties, when we talk about white grape varieties, white wine grape varieties, I would focus on probably Vignole. It's done very well at the Indy International Wine Competition.
Yeah, a really good variety.
Another one would be the cold hardy ones. Well, if we go back to Vignole, Saval is a great one.
And Vidal, those are old French hybrids. All three of those are all kind of standard whites. Yeah. Chardonnay is a relatively newer one, not quite as popular anymore.
And then when we think of the cold hardy ones. Le Crescent has been
Brianna.
A real popular one.
Those are both really popular.
Frontenac Gris. Right.
So when I go to a restaurant, and I'm looking at the wine list, and I'm seeing basically the same like 10 kinds of wines, and I've never seen the grapes that you have just described. How do I find these wines?
I think people need to start asking for them. Ask for Indiana wines. Ask for things that are locally grown. They're out there. I think sometimes restaurants are just a little, I don't know if they just don't, they're afraid no one will ask for them, or I don't know what it is. But
we
need to have a push, I think, in Indiana to get more.
There seems to be an interest in having the local microbrews at a lot of restaurants and bars and so forth. So why not the local wines too? Yeah. There's some complications that are from a regulation standpoint. A lot of that has to do with
distribution. Wholesaling.
And the wholesale distribution marketing channels. Mm-hmm. So a winery isn't allowed to wholesale directly to a restaurant.
Is that right? Yeah, they have to go through a distributor.
They have to either have a micro wholesaler's license themselves, which costs them quite a bit of money and is time consuming and everything, or they have to go through a wholesaler distributor. And that is, the wholesalers and distributors, they're great people. They do a wonderful service, but they just can't serve all these little small contracts. So while they work with our big wineries, Easley and Oliver and Huber work with various wholesalers, distributors, the smaller guys, especially those that are, 5 or 10,000 gallons, they just don't have enough volume to fill grocery store shelves or liquor store shelves, or to even maintain a real standing on a wine list in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. So that becomes a complication, and it's a frustration for our wineries because they would really, and sometimes the restaurant in town would really like to do that, but between them, they can't find a wholesaler distributor to make this whole circle happen.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's a messed up
system. How do
the
smaller wineries then make money off their wines?
From their tasting rooms, festivals.
Almost all of it sold directly to the to the consumer right out of the tasting room. Or their wine club or something like that. Wow. They can do a wine club.
So if I'm really interested in Indiana wines, I really need to go to the tasting room.
Yeah, you need to go to the wineries.
Yeah, I need to go to the winery.
Yeah, do the wine trail thing.
Ask for a tour. You know, they all do tours. They show you how their product's made. You know, a lot of them offer for, say, $3, you can get 5 wines. You know, some offer free tastings. They're all just a little bit different.
So it's mid-September. So what are the growers doing right now?
They're harvesting
grapes.
Most of them
are right in the middle of harvest, and processing and starting wine production. It all happens at once. You know,
they're crushing and stemming grapes and starting to ferment.
We don't put them in a cold room. We, you know, a winery will harvest, and it goes right to the winery, and the process is starting right now. We're crushing, destemming, pressing juice off. It's all happening.
So what was the year like? Was this a good year for grapes?
Not the greatest. We've had too much rain. This rainfall during harvest is just a giant hassle. It dilutes flavors. And so, you know, you usually wait a few days after rain. But the other problem is if you keep getting rains, it's rots. It causes the berry skins to split open. It's not like this is the worst year ever, because we've got a lot of varieties that handle that just fine. If this much rain happened in California, they would be talking about it worldwide. Oh, my God, it's a disaster. And actually, this kind of stuff happens in France a lot more than people realize. And you see it in the news, and nobody talks about it much. But that's why French vintages are so well scored, because some years are not so good. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, all the 62 or the 85 or the whatever, you know, either have a good reputation or bad.
We talk about, 1975 was a great year. Sure, I don't know if it was or not. But really, we're talking about how much rain there was in the late summer and fall.
Oftentimes, it's the last 4 weeks of the growing season. That's that from the start of the ripening process until harvest. That's usually about a four-week period. Mm-hmm. That period right then is temperature and rainfall are the real key.
Because the great grapes make great wine. Yeah. You know, you can't make a
really
good wine.
We would really like to have warm, sunny days and cool nights and no rain through that whole period. And this year, you know, a week ago, it was 96 degrees when we had our class out there, and we're picking fruit, you know, that's been ripening it with 70 degree nights and 90 plus degree days. That's not very good, especially for aromatic whites. Mm-hmm. You know, that you're losing the flavor and aroma compounds. And
so what are we going to see maybe in the next 10 years in Indiana in terms of winemaking and grape growing?
I think there'll be some new varieties that people take on. You know, I think some that are just recently being developed now. Minnesota is continuing to release varieties. So I think there'll be some continued reform in how we do things there.
I think some of these super cold, hardy varieties are going to really, people are going to take note of those. And those would be like the Marquette, Frontenac for the reds and whites.
La Crescent, those. And I think especially for the northern part of the state, I think we'll have a lot more wineries. And I'd like to see us plant a lot more grapes. I'm a little frustrated that over the years we went from almost none, about 50 acres when we started the program that we kind of count and or find anywhere, up to over 600, probably 650, maybe 700 now. We've had some new plantings. We've had some people that have aged and gotten out of it too, so it's, you know, a little ebb and flow there. But I'd like to see us get, you know, 1,000, 1,200, 1,500 acres of grapes in the ground. We could use every single acre plant.
And I think,
easily,
too, when you have grapes in the ground, people then recognize where the wine comes from more, or would recognize Indiana more for a winemaking state.
Right. It gives you a sense of authenticity.
Yeah, and I think it's going to take more grapes in the ground.
All right. Thank you. My thanks again to Jill and Bruce. In IBJ's print edition this week, Sam Stahl takes an even closer look at how influential the Purdue Wine Grape team has been on the national winemaking scene. For example, several Purdue graduates have gone on to own significant vineyards in Oregon and California. Also, in this week's issue, check out Haley Colombo's report on the long wait for a new city recycling program from the Hogsett administration. City officials say they're about to debut a set of options, although the final decision and implementation could take many more months. You can find these stories and the rest of the latest business news at ibj.com. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I'm Mason King. We'll be back next week.